Wednesday, August 28th. Welcome on in to Studio 2. I'm Cherry Gregg.
Hello, everybody. I'm Avi Wolfman-Arendt. And if you will indulge me for a bit, Cherry, today we're talking about school funding.
Yes, we are.
And I wanted to start with a little trip into the archives.
Parents and administrators from urban, suburban, and rural school districts are suing Pennsylvania for failing to ensure that all children receive a thorough and efficient education. As WHYY's Kevin McCurry reports, plaintiffs say the case hinges on failure to meet the state's own academic standards.
Superintendent Joe Bruni, who runs schools in the William Penn District in Delaware County, says his complaint about state education funding...
You know who that is?
I think I recognize that voice.
That's our executive producer, Kevin McCrory. Wow. Back in his reporter days, 10 years ago, that story is 10 years old. Mm-hmm. He was covering the fact that a group of school districts and parents and organizations were suing the state of Pennsylvania, saying education funding was inadequate, unconstitutional. There have been a lot of twists and turns since then, but we just recently got a state budget that starts to address this issue. And it adds an additional $1.1 billion to K-12 education funding.
And that sounds like a lot of money, but there's a lot of work to be done.
There is. And so today on the show, we have a big question for you. Will this large new influx of school funding in Pennsylvania mean better outcomes for students? And how do you think the money should be spent? Call us, 888-477-9499. That's WHYY. Or you can email studio2@whyy.org.
Yeah, I look forward to hearing what our listeners have to say about this. You know, they're
smarter
on the
group
ground.
Of people. They have good ideas, I'm sure.
They're in the trenches. They have kids in schools, you know.
Give us a call, 888-477-9499. Email studio2@whyy.org. That's our big topic today. But first, as always, a trio of local news stories. And we'll start with a story that also has to do with very large numbers. Cherry Gregg, tell us all about it.
Oh, yes. So this was our subject on Tuesday. We talked about those impact studies that just were released about the proposed Sixers arena in Market East. Well, some academics are questioning the research firm's findings. Some of these academics say that these impact studies should just be ignored. And just in case
in case throw them in the trash.
They just get rid of them. Yeah. That's what they said. So in case you missed Tuesday's show, we talked about the four impact studies. There is a community impact assessment, design assessment, traffic, transportation, and parking analysis. There was also an economic impact analysis. And that report will probably have the most influence. It projected about
The money report.
The money report. The coin report. The cash coin. dollar bill report. It projected $1.9 billion in new economic activity in the first 30 years and over the course of 30 years, and $390 million in new net tax revenue for the city, the school district, and the state. But these academics say that they criticize the arena, and they say consultants like the one hired to do this called CSL often present a more optimistic and rosy picture. They also say these reports tend to have outsized influence on the final decisions because the cities, of course, are looking at the potential economic impact, and that's how they're trying to sell it. And this all was done in a story by the Philadelphia Inquirer, and they spoke with economists from Kennesaw State University. His name is J.C. Bradford, and he called the CSL report a concocted PR document.
Yikes.
I know.
That's pretty direct.
And said there was nothing credible there. So, you know, I mean, people can go back and forth over these reports. Mm-hmm. Folks are going to be criticized who does them. Mm-hmm. They hire consultants to do this. Of course, the consultants were paid for by the team. People have issues with that. But I mean, it's like it just sort of begs the question, how much weight should we put on these impact studies?
Yeah. And I think it's a totally fair question. And we had this conversation yesterday, and Vivian Chang with Asian Americans United brought up this very point, talking about the specific consultancy that did the economic impact report for the 76ers
That's
arena.
Their job, yeah.
They're specialists in this area. Not a lot of firms sort of market this product will do an analysis like this. And I think it's fair to say that there's some incentive for them to paint a rosier picture because they want to get hired by the next group that wants to build a stadium. Mm-hmm. I get that. To balance that out, I would say that if you're going to criticize the economic impact report as sort of not being worthy of like a peer-reviewed academic mm-hmm. journal, my suspicion would be that the community impact report also would not meet that standard, right?
Yeah.
And so these are consultant reports. They should be taken with a grain of salt.
Mm-hmm.
I think all four of them should be. This story in the Inquirer singles out the economic one, but, you know, I would be interested to see someone go through the other three and see if they could find the same inconsistencies or overprojections, because my gut tells me that you could also find that in the other three.
Yeah.
That's just kind of, that's just my gut.
And your gut is probably right. By the way, the Sixers.
I have a big gut. So, you know.
By the way, the Sixers have said that they are still reviewing the numbers, but that they support the benefits for the city. So they're still, you know, they haven't come out. We, of course, invited them on our show.
And they're still welcome, by the way.
Yeah.
So today in the main segment, Sherry, we're talking about a legal saga that started 10 years ago. But I want to talk about one more legal saga that is a decade old.
Whoa.
And this one was summarized very well by Abraham Gutman in today's Inquirer. It starts in 2014.
Mm-hmm.
Two neighboring families in Abington Township, Montgomery County, are having a very typical seeming neighbor dispute over like a property line. And in the midst of all this, one neighbor hurls an anti-Semitic slur at the other neighbor who is Jewish. And so the Jewish family who was targeted by the slur, they respond by putting up 23 lawn signs facing the offending neighbor with messages like, got racism, no place for racism, on and on and on, facing the other person's house.
Mm-hmm.
So the original family, they sue. They say these lawn signs are defamatory to them and a nuisance. And just recently, the Pennsylvania Supreme Court narrowly sided with the family who put up the lawn sign, saying basically that their free speech rights supersede whatever nuisance or harassment is implied by the signs themselves. So the Supreme Court says you can put up signs like this, but it's a fascinating case, right, that gets at where the line is between free speech and harassment. In this case, the lawn signs were judged to be okay.
Yeah, because we live in a world where you walk down the street and you could see signs that you don't necessarily like, and you mm-hmm. don't necessarily have the right to tell somebody what sign they can put up on their property. You just turn away.
But this is interesting.
Yeah.
According to the Inquirer article, the decision said it might have been a different story if the signs emitted light or noise.
Mm-hmm.
So, right,
because it would be coming onto their property, right?
Is that kind of
that's
where the
what the argument would be? Like the sound waves are coming onto my side of the street. Those light beams are coming into my window.
It's like physics and law all colliding. I mean, it's an look. Obviously, it's a very serious case. But the decision brings up these sort of interesting larger conversations about what free speech is. And sometimes if a speech is coming out of your mouth or some sort of box in sound waves, it's different than if it's speech but written. You know, it's just fascinating.
And just sitting
to
there
me.
Silently.
Yeah.
By the way, I think they need a mediator because it's hard to live, you know, with a 10-year-old beef with your neighbor. You know,
I'm curious. I wonder if they still live next to each other.
I don't know. I wonder. That's interesting.
Now let's shift gears.
Ooh, that was so good, Avi. And so a couple lost control of their vehicle while, quote, getting busy, causing that vehicle to roll into the Schuylkill River early this morning.
Oh, boy.
Just before dawn. So police use the term getting busy, by the way. But to be clear, this couple had parked their car along Kelly Drive to engage in romantic activity or to make out. And somehow,
good euphemism,
they accidentally shifted their 2020 Range Rover out of park into full gear. The vehicle began to roll and both of them had to jump out just before the SUV rolled into the river.
Let's be clear. They are safe.
They are okay and unharmed.
Yes. The car is not well.
No.
In the river.
The car is not well.
But But the couple is fine.
It's a 2020 Range Rover. I hope y'all have insurance.
Yeah, that's a
That's not a cheap car.
Yeah, Kelley Blue Book value on that is pretty high. I agree.
So divers had to come in, and they were working to fish the vehicle out of the water. And as of a few hours ago, they were still in the process of doing that. But it takes you back to those making out days from high school when the only place you had was the car. And I'm just like, 4:30 in the morning on a Wednesday.
I have so many thoughts and so few that I can share on this program.
Absolutely.
And I'm gonna end it right there. Coming up in the next segment, we will talk about school funding. Mm-hmm. Big news on the school funding front. We have a pair of experts in. We're going to hear from Superintendent Tony Watlington of the School District of Philadelphia. That's all coming up in the next segment. Send your thoughts about school funding to studio2@whyy.org. We'll be right back.
Supporting WHYY, Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at pennmedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
And welcome back into Studio 2. I'm Avi Wolfman-Arendt.
And I'm Cherry Gregg. School is back in session for many students in our region. And while some districts opened their doors right after Labor Day, Philadelphia Public Schools started this week. But already in Philly, the first week, 63 schools are dismissing kids early because of excessive heat and no air conditioning. I had a long conversation last night with an educator at a comprehensive high school in Philadelphia. They asked that we not use their name so that they could speak freely. But this longtime faculty member says they are frustrated.
We closed early today because half of our building has air, literally. The science classrooms, the arts, the world languages have no air. The entire side of the building has no air. Where's the equity? And they're patting themselves on the back today on the news because they're like, oh, 2 years ago, there was 118 schools that were closing because they didn't have air. Last year was 73. We're down to 63. Okay, why are we even back in August?
And that's just one of the complaints that you will hear from parents, teachers, and students themselves about outdated schools and insufficient resources. But a long fight and lawsuit over fair funding finally ended last year with a state court saying the state system for funding was unconstitutional. Now, finally, money should start flowing in. But where's it going and where should it go? To break all that down, let me introduce Dan Yervik Acklesberg, lead attorney on that school funding lawsuit with the Public Interest Law Center. And Dan, I guess maybe get folks up to speed first. What is the state of the lawsuit? How did we get here? And like, where is litigation right now? Is it truly over, or is it kind of simmering in the background?
Sure. And thanks for having me. To start, while I love that introduction, there are a number of attorneys that had a really central role in this case. So my office is the Public Interest Law Center. We also work with the Education Law Center, another nonprofit in the city. And O'Melveny & Myers, a national law firm. So we did win. It was great hearing Kevin talk about that from 2015. There's a long time to trial. We had trial in 2021, 2022. We won. And we won because the judge found from facilities to staffing, there was just deprivations all around the Commonwealth, right? Kids just didn't have what they need. And the judge determined for the first time what the Pennsylvania Constitution actually requires, that all children are entitled to a comprehensive, effective, and contemporary public education, and found that wasn't being provided because of the way we fund our schools. What the court said is, I'm going to give the respondents in this case, and that was the executive and legislative branches, I'm going to give them the first opportunity to fix it, to make it right, to enact a plan to bring the system into constitutional compliance. And so that's what we've been at work at for about the last year. There was something called the Basic Education Funding Commission, which had met around the state, made a proposal. Much of that proposal was adopted this past July.
With the state budget.
With the state budget. And so it was not perfect for ways that I can get into. But what the General Assembly said is that as of this year, schools are underfunded just in their operating expenses by about $4.8 billion, and $4.5 of which is the state's responsibility. Now, they didn't just simply give that $4.5 billion to schools, and that's why we're still far away from an actual final resolution, they gave about 11% of that to schools this year. So in terms of where we are in the case, the decision wasn't appealed. We have the ability to go back to court when we think it's appropriate. But we have made, in some ways, some really significant progress. Bipartisan majorities have acknowledged that our schools are billions of dollars underfunded. Now we got to make sure they actually finish the job and give schools what they deserve.
So 11% of what you say is needed, or what the commission said is needed, was in this budget. I just want to make sure I understand that.
The numbers that in the final budget differed from what the commission had recommended by a few hundred million dollars. 11% of what the Commonwealth, what was passed legislation. So if you can go online to the Department of Education now and see the adequacy gaps that this new law passed in July says exist for every school district in the right. Commonwealth. So for Philadelphia, that's $1.25 billion. And then they said in year one, we're going to give you 11% of that.
And so give people a sense of where that money is right now, because I'm trying to put myself in the position mm-hmm. of parents, community members, students. Like, am I seeing that money now? Is there delay time on that? Like, this is kind of sounds like the down payment a bit yep. on making up this gap that the court has identified. So is the money in action?
The money is in action. So there's to start, there's a funny thing in Pennsylvania school budgeting, which is that public schools have to pass their budgets in June each year, but the state doesn't pass its budget until June or July or August or sometimes not until the next year.
Yeah. If they fight long enough, yeah.
Yeah. And so what school districts have to do is they have to make estimates as to right. what they think they're actually going to get. In Philadelphia, what they did is they estimated that they would get pretty much what they got. They estimated they'd get this big influx of funding, but they did use that money. What they used it for the most part, is to maintain staff that were going to be let go, that were hired through federal COVID funding. So school districts all around the state got significant influxes of federal dollars from the various COVID relief acts. And the School District of Philadelphia, for example, used that to hire more counselors, more social emotional staff, some reading specialists, things like that. Those people were scheduled to come off the books mm-hmm. This year. And so it didn't get a lot of fanfare, but what they decided back when they proposed and then passed their budget, they said, we're just going to keep them because we actually know we need them and we've needed them all along. So in practice, and for Philadelphia, yes, the money is in use right now, but you're not seeing new people come into the school. You're seeing people that would have left
right.
get to stay.
And then with all these infrastructure yeah. problems, right? Like, but it sounds like not a lot of the money would have been steered toward that because it was about sort of maintaining staffing levels from before.
Yeah, so really critical to understand is that even though the state said schools are underfunded by nearly $5 billion, that was just based on operating expenses and it wasn't based on capital needs at all.
Right.
So they haven't actually addressed that part of the decision. So, you know, Philadelphia estimates it needs to spend about $7 billion over 10 years to bring their facilities up to speed. We're still nowhere near that funding. So we're still working, but that frustration of that teacher is real. The conditions are not that much different than they were last year in the schools. So we're on the road there, but we really have only made a down payment. And it's a critical step, right? It's a critical step that both parties, I think 45 members of the Pennsylvania Senate voted for a bill that says schools are underfunded by nearly $5 billion. That's a big step, but it really is only one step. Now we actually need to finish the job and get them the money.
Yeah, and I want to just remind our listeners, we want to hear from you. Do you think the large new influx of school funding in Pennsylvania will mean better outcomes for students? How do you think that money should be spent? Call us. The number is 888-477-9499. You can also email studio2@whyy.org. Again, that number is 888-477-9499. So, Dan, I got to ask you, does this mean, given the fact that, you know, this is only a tip of what we really need here in a district like Philadelphia, does this mean this is going to be an ongoing battle, political battle, every single year, every single budget?
It will to a certain extent. When you look around the country at these kinds of cases, and they have been filed in a lot of other states, when they're most successful, they're successful because an engaged public demands that legislatures actually accomplish what they said they were going to do. That's one of the things we've tried to stress all along is that, you know, as lawyers, you love the big, glorious court win. And that this was that. But we've tried to say all along is that, you know, we could win and ultimately not really see the impact if the public isn't engaged holding the legislature's feet to the fire. We'll use the tools that we have in our ability, but we are going to have to make sure each year. Now, the lawsuit itself demanded, the decision demanded a plan, and we sort of have started there. But I am confident that that with a law, which now admits that schools are underfunded by billions of dollars, an unappealed court judgment, and an outraged public, that we're going to get there.
And you say the tools at your disposal, I imagine the main tool is just going back to court. This took 10 years. I know you're not going to have to repeat every step that you did the first time. Well, it didn't quite take 10. I'm exaggerating. Almost 10. You're not going to have to repeat all those steps. But if you did have to go back to court because it's just gridlock in Harrisburg, I mean, what would that process look like? I mean, how many years might it take? I know you don't have a crystal ball, but give us a sense.
Well, we wouldn't have a new trial, right? They didn't appeal it. We have a judgment. It's unappealed. The students' constitutional rights are being violated. We don't have to reprove the case. What we'd have to do is say they haven't complied with the court's order. I think it would be a much shorter process.
So like to seek a motion for a contempt order or something like that.
Yeah, there's a process to get supplemental relief when you win a judgment in Commonwealth Court, and that's what we would do. Yeah.
Only guy that didn't go to law school is lost
say,
now.
I want to play another clip, and this is from that same educator that I spoke to from this low-resource, high-needs school, and they say they're not optimistic that this new influx of funding will bring real change. Take a listen.
It's such a broken system that those who need it the most still won't see it. And that's the truth. We're not going to see it. And we never see it on the school level. And it's always some magnanimous, here's a new curriculum. I don't need new English books. I need after-school tutors. I need somebody who's going to come in and be a support in a classroom. Like, I need other things. I didn't need a new math curriculum. I didn't need a new English curriculum.
A lot of frustration there. So, Dan, my question for you is, this lawsuit, there's new funding coming in. Is there any accountability, like, at the district level? So the money goes from the state, it shoots out to the different districts, and then what?
So districts have to publicly report on what they're using the money for, and it spells out a number of programs that they can put into place, lowering class size, for example, more counselors. And each year, districts have to publicly report so that anyone can see what they're going to do with the funding. But absolutely, we should hold the School District of Philadelphia and every other school district responsible for using this in the ways that it should be intended. That's really what the case was about. The frustration she's talking about, like, I need another counselor, I need more staff. More than anything, what this case was about and the problems we see all across the Commonwealth are not enough staff and falling down facilities. That's what this is about. Yeah. We don't want money for money's sake. We want money because money hires the professionals that can change the trajectory of a child's life. That's what this is all about. And so districts have to publicly report on that. And teachers in Philadelphia and the public in Philadelphia should absolutely hold the school district accountable and ask how every single dollar is being spent.
Give us a call, 888-477-9499. We're talking about school funding this hour. What do you think schools should use this new influx of money on? Email us, studio2@whyy.org. Jennifer says they should bring back certified school librarians. Mm-hmm. Valentine says bring back music, drama, and art for all students. And I want to bring in another voice here. This is David Hardy joining us. He is a charter school founder. He is currently president of Girard College and a distinguished senior fellow at the Commonwealth Foundation. So, David, you've been listening to the conversation so far. When you heard about this judgment, this lawsuit victory, where did your mind go?
Well, I heard about it, and what I thought was what the woman who spoke earlier, the woman who worked at the district, said, that the money's not going to get to the right kids.
Expand on that, not get to the right kids. Yeah.
Well, here's what happens. You have a school in a low-income neighborhood. And remember, everybody here has to go to a school in their neighborhood. That's the law. Address assigned, school assigned. So if you live in a low income neighborhood where you have schools that have high needs, you normally have the most inexperienced teachers. You normally have an inexperienced principal, and that means you don't get the resources to the school that you need. And then if any of those people get better at their job, they get recruited away to another school. So it's a never ending cycle of failure. And one of the things, when the judge made this award, she said, this isn't just about money. This is about change. And I think what we need to do is change our attitude about public education and stop thinking that we only have to fund one type of school. We should fund multiple types of schools.
And so what would your proposal be? What would you do with this new influx of cash in a world where you had that kind of control?
I would give the money to the parents and let them decide where they want to send their child to school. And how you do that, you can do that in a number of ways. You can open up additional schools like charter schools and things like that. But you can also have government payments to private schools, which there's a lot of those that run pretty well and that could do a good job educating these children, but their families don't have the money to go to. And why spend more money on things that we know haven't worked in the past and that the addition of money aren't really going to change, when we can try something new and different? Okay, we aren't losing anything trying something new and different, because what we have right now isn't working. So if we try something new and different, it might work. That's a good thing. But if it doesn't, we're not going backwards at all, because we have something right now that doesn't work. What we've done is we've decided that this other thing doesn't work. Let's keep moving till we find something that works.
Let me ask you a follow-up question here. What would you do for high needs, lower resourced schools that have students that are pushed aside or left out of these special admit and charter schools? You know, the students that some of these other schools, these charter schools and private schools, will not take. What would you do with them?
Well, first of all, I'm not sure that it's quite the same in charter schools as it is in selective admission schools. Selective admission schools get to look at all the data from the student and make a decision about whether they get to take them. Charter school gets a student who applies. They have to take students who apply. That's not the same thing.
But if it doesn't work out, they can remove that student and they would end up in a public school.
If it doesn't work out, okay? But if someone
and
goes
so what
to
would
a
they be left with?
School,
yes. Excuse me? And what would they be left with? What would be left for those students who could not fit into the charter schools? Where would they go?
First of all, I don't believe that the charter schools alone are the solution. I think, like I said, I think there should be multiple people, multiple providers of school or public education for low-income students, for all students.
Let me bring in a caller now. This is Liz from Philadelphia, who wants to talk about where this funding should go. Liz, you're joining us on Studio 2. Give us your plan. I'd love to hear it.
Hi, I'm a proud Philly public school parent, and I'm also the home and school president at my Philly school. I want to see every school have art, music, instrumental music lessons, libraries with a librarian, sports, after school clubs. I think those are the opportunities to grow as a person that should be fixtures in every school. And they are in other districts, but I want to see that in these underfunded districts as well. And obviously a clean, safe, functioning school building with a fun school yard as well.
That's a great perspective. Yeah. Thanks so much, Liz. So, Dan, you were listening there for a second, and I wanted to give you a chance to respond to some of the things that David Hardy laid out, because that's a very different vision. And I think David is skeptical, as many people are, that more funding will equal better outcomes if there isn't some sort of structural change.
So one of the, at this point, one of the most studied phenomenon in education research is, does money matter? And it absolutely does. It's been confirmed over and over and over again. So will it lead to better outcomes? Of course, money is not sufficient, but it's necessary because the people that can make the change, they need a salary. You have to pay them. It's pretty straightforward. And every credible piece of research says that. David says, charter schools are part of the answer. Well, charter schools are underfunded too. Charter schools do about as well as district schools do, and charter schools get funding through the district. And so just like Philadelphia, district schools are underfunded, charter schools are underfunded too. Private schools are not an answer. Mm-hmm. They're not an answer because, one, studies show they don't work, but two, and because they can discriminate against children, they can turn away a child because they're too poor or because they have two moms or for any reason, except for very few. But also the right is to a comprehensive and effective public education. That's what the right is. These are public schools. So there's no circumstance under which private education is going to be an answer to bringing our school funding system into constitutional compliance.
And so I want to bring in a new voice into the conversation. We now have the superintendent of the School District of Philadelphia, Tony Watlington, joining us on the phone. Welcome to Studio 2, Superintendent.
Good afternoon. It's a pleasure to be with you. Thank you so much.
Yeah, I know you've been listening to our conversation, and we're talking about the funds that Philadelphia was able to get, this increase in funding. And my first question for you, how much of that will go to just filling the gap left after the COVID funds ended versus going to new programs and filling the equity gap?
We intend to do a combination of both because we've been good stewards of the tax dollars, and we were able to take full advantage of the additional $230 million that we'll receive in this current school year, thanks to the leadership of Governor Shapiro, our legislators, in addition to the additional $240 million that this district will receive over the next 4 to 5 years as a result of Mayor Parker's budget leadership. So in tandem with identifying what's working, what are the things that are not producing us a return on investment, we'll be able to, A, not run a deficit in fiscal year 24-25. Number two, we'll be able to push on three big priorities related to accelerating academic achievement, improving customer service, and doing a better job of partnering with our families as equal partners this school year. So these dollars will be put to good use this year, and I want to be clear that we are absolutely committed to demonstrating the return on investment for all of these dollars.
Superintendent Watlington, we're getting emails and comments from a lot of listeners saying that they really want to spend the money on the basics. Like Melissa says, spend the money on HVAC and food. We had someone else say art and music, bring back extracurriculars or fill out extracurriculars. I mean, what do you see as the priorities moving forward if indeed legislators are able to unlock more funds?
Absolutely. Let me say, relative to accelerating academic achievement, which is the North Star in this school district that is getting better, to ensure that we continue to drive student attendance rates up, four-year graduation rates up, the dropout rate down, and to improve our standardized test scores, which most school districts are measured by, we think it's important that we continue to invest in the number one factor that improves student learning, and that's highly qualified, well-supported teachers. So not only do we need to provide the support to teachers, but they need the appropriate high-quality curriculum materials in the classroom every day. So that's really, really important. Our teachers also need the very best professional development, professional learning opportunities, so they're prepared to meet the very diverse learning styles and, quite frankly, the diverse needs of our students in the classroom. We also know that when we focus on students, our students need us to make sure that we attend to their social and emotional development and well-being, so we have to invest resources. Because it's no secret, many of our kids still are suffering from trauma, suffering from higher rates of anxiety and depression and the like. that was there before the pandemic exacerbated some of those situations. So we also think that kids ought to do more than just reading and math every day, and they ought to have access to enriching opportunities, art, music, and things that complement reading and math in the classroom. There are a lot of things we want to fund, but we are trying to be very strategic about prioritizing those areas to make sure that we meet the needs of our students and that we equip teachers with what they need to teach on the front lines every day.
And Superintendent, I know you. We only had you for a moment. I got to ask you, what will it take, you know, for Philadelphia to get up to a level of other more affluent districts? What will it take?
I think it will take, well, first let me answer the question this way. We did not get into our state of academic achievement overnight. We did not get into a state of having 63 schools still that don't have adequate HVAC and air conditioning systems such that we have to close those schools early on hot weather days like today. Since we didn't get into that situation overnight, we won't get out of it overnight. We won't get to the top of the pack in all the areas that we want to measure ourselves against other districts overnight. What I can say to you is that it will take significant additional investment every year over the next 20 years to make up for decades of historic underfunding. And thanks to Governor Shapiro's leadership, some of the leaders in the legislature, and Mayor Sherelle Parker's leadership, we are well on our way starting this year.
Well, there you have it. 20 years. Two decades of investment. That is Superintendent Dr. Tony Watlington of the School District of Philadelphia. We really appreciate the time on what I know is a busy day during the first week of the academic year. Thanks again, Superintendent, for your time on Studio 2.
Thank you. It's always a pleasure to be with you.
Coming up, we're going to keep this conversation moving. We've got David Hardy with us. We've got Dan Ervic Acklesberg with us. And we've got you. A lot of comments coming in. We're going to get to some of them on the other side of this break. How would you spend new education dollars? Studio 2 at WHYY.org.
Supporting WHYY, Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at pennmedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
Welcome back to Studio 2. I'm Cherry Gregg.
I'm Avi Wolfman-Arendt. We're talking about school funding this hour, and this all follows a successful school funding lawsuit here in Pennsylvania. So as the school year gets started, we're asking, where should the money go? What investments should schools be making? What do you think would make the biggest difference for students and teachers? Give us a call, 888-477-9499. You can also email studio2@whyy.org.
Before we bring in our next guest, we want to bring in a caller. We have Emily from Philadelphia, who's a teacher. Emily, welcome to Studio 2.
Hi, thank you for having me. Yes, I'm a high school teacher at an innovative Philadelphia public high school called Building 21. And the most significant factor is smaller classroom sizes. It doesn't matter if you have a highly qualified, highly trained teacher. 32, 33 students in one classroom is simply too much. Our students deserve the same thing that privileged parents pay for, which we know works. Smaller classrooms, more experiential learning opportunities, more personalized learning that fits the needs of each individual student. And that's only, we can only accomplish that with smaller classroom sizes. That should be the number one priority. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for that comment.
Yes. And we want to bring in now Pennsylvania Representative Jordan Harris, the Democratic chair of the House Appropriations Committee, who helped negotiate this year's increased education funding. You're on Studio 2, Jordan. Welcome.
Thank you so much for having me. Always glad to be with you.
So, Representative, take us inside the negotiations that happened in the spring and into the summer. How did you guys end up at the number that you ended up at? What was the sort of, give us a sense of what the compromise was.
Well, I mean, we started off with the Education Funding Commission report that plotted out over a number of years how we could get to fully funding our schools based off of where the Commonwealth Court ruling left us. So, you know, we sent that number over to the Senate, which didn't get done. What we were able to get was over $500 million going through a formula where resources are allocated to the school districts that need it the most. So, you know, you'll hear this $1.1 billion number in new funding for public education, which is true. But a part of that $1.1 billion is $500 million going directly into a formula that, that funds the schools that have been inadequately funded over years. So that means school districts like Philadelphia got $231 million. When you look at the basic education formula and this formula, school districts like Reading, $40 million, new dollars. And the good thing about this is that this is what we call built into the base, which means next year when we negotiate the budget, we will start from this new number for funding for the Philadelphia School District.
Representative Harris, I'm not sure if you were on the line when Superintendent Watlington was with us, but he talked about making these investments and growing these investments over the course of the next two decades. You know Harrisburg well. Do you think that's possible? Can you keep this momentum going for a decade or two and continue to grow this money?
Well, the thing for me is that we don't have an option. Like, we have to. We have a Commonwealth Court ruling that says that we must, and if we don't, the plaintiffs could take us right back to court, and the court could impose their own funding formula on us.
Are your Republican colleagues convinced by that, aware of that? How persuadable are they?
I think they are. I think, you know, a couple years ago, we had a problem with congressional maps. The Supreme Court decided to draw their own congressional maps, mm-hmm. and I think many of my Republican colleagues are looking at that, and they don't want that to happen. They want us to be able to do our jobs. Here's what I'll say. We don't need two decades to do this. Mm-hmm. We have a roadmap that could get this done in 7 years. We need to stick to that roadmap and get it done. Our children deserve it. A first grader doesn't get to do first grade over again, and our families can't wait two decades to fix the broken and underfunded system.
And as we wrap up with you, Rep. Harris, got to ask you, I mean, how dependent is this on which party has power of the House or which party is in control of the legislature? Because, yes, you said some of this money is now built in, but it's still going to take year after year. And you guys have, the Democrats have a very razor-thin majority right now.
Well, from a political standpoint, we're trying to increase that majority in November. But you're absolutely right. I mean, us being able to continue to fully fund public education is the byproduct of having a majority. And we need to keep that majority, grow the majority in order for us to continue to be able to do this. But here's the thing, beyond politics, this should be important to everybody. The facts remain that we won't be able to bring more business to Pennsylvania if we don't have an educated workforce to do it. We won't see our children reach the highest heights that they could get to unless we have schools that are educating them to their fullest ability. And the bottom line is, it takes money to do that. We have a court ruling that says that we haven't been doing it. We need to do it. We took a good step in this budget, and we're excited about that, but we got to continue to walk down that road.
Well, that was the voice of Pennsylvania Representative Jordan Harris, Democratic Chair of the House Appropriations Committee. Representative Harris, we appreciate the time on Studio 2.
Thank you so much.
Let me read in a couple more comments. Here's Ruth from Chester who says, I keep hearing that parents know best about education for their children with no evidence of that. Mm-hmm. Teachers are professionals who have a lot of training and should be trusted to help parents' kids. Deborah, on the other hand, says the school district needs to be better stewards of any funds they receive. Let me bring back in David Hardy, president of Girard College and a distinguished senior fellow at the Commonwealth Foundation. David, you've been taking this all in. You heard from the superintendent. You heard from Representative Harris. I think a lot of people are saying there's just a baseline we're not at yet. Whether you want to have that conversation about choice, you still need to get to a place where schools are safe and they're heated and cooled. And there are, you know, basic extracurriculars. So what's your response to that conversation?
Well, I'm not against having schools that are well-funded and have all the things that students need. I'm just saying that the way this structure is set up, you don't get that in low-income neighborhoods. There's a structural barrier in low-income neighborhoods because
like I said, they get the least experienced teachers, the least experienced administrators, which means they get the least resources.
Yeah.
That nobody talked about solving that problem.
And Dad, you have a point on that. It seemed like you wanted to chime in.
Well, I mean,
and sorry, I should introduce Dan Ervik Acklesberg with the Public Interest Law Center. Go ahead, Dan.
I was going to say, I mean, so it used to be in Philadelphia, for example, that that teachers were sort of self-selected by seniority, and then in sort of the education reform movement, there was site selection where principals can essentially go out and hire for their own schools. And while there is some benefit to that, right, going in and interviewing, saying this is what we're doing here. There is a real downside, which is that there is this movement and an ability to go to a school that's nice, that's in a nice neighborhood, that has a parent group that can more actively support the schools. That's a very real issue. I just think that my solution to that would be to solve that issue by looking at incentivizing teachers or doing what you need to do to get to infuse resources into those schools, because certainly those kids need the most resources. The kids that are in poverty, kids that are learning English, those kids need the schools with the most resources. That includes making sure that they have sufficient numbers of highly qualified teachers.
Yeah, and I want to remind you all that we want to hear from you. Do you think the large new influx of school funding in Pennsylvania will mean better outcomes for students? How do you think that money should be spent? Our number is 888-477-9499. You can email studio2@whyy.org and get those calls in. I want to listen to another voice. This is a father at McCall who's advocating for funding into new technologies.
I think investment in training and technology, computer science, enrichment opportunities, things like that. It seems to me the school district does a decent job of handling the basics, but it seems like there's opportunities to improve funding of, those sort of above and beyond learning opportunities to prepare kids for technology, new technologies, things of that nature.
And Dan, I wanted to ask this question and would love to hear what David has to say as well. When I spoke to that educator for a long time yesterday, one of the issues was she had an issue with the way funding within the district is allocated, because some of the lower resourced, higher need schools are not necessarily the first on the list. Can you explain that process a little bit? And does there need to be some reform in that area, Dan?
Well, so generally the way the district budgets resources is just based upon the number of students you have. So if you look, the district has guides to school-based budgets where it says, if you have between zero and, don't quote me the exact number, zero and 400 students, you get one counselor. And if you have zero and 700, you get two counselors. And it's just this formula that says, if you have certain things, this is what you get. And I think it's reasonable. You zero to 33 kids, you get one teacher. It's a very formulaic-based approach. I think that you could say that we need, with this new money, we really need to surge money to the schools that really need it more. But it is a very straightforward formulaic approach where it's just based upon your student numbers. You get a certain allocation of teachers and funding.
And quick follow up, but all schools are not created equal. If your 33 students, half of them have special needs, it's not the same as a school with 33, with 33 who are reading on grade level.
Yeah. So the both special education and English language as a second language or English as a second language teachers are taken through a slightly different process. So that actually is supposed to be based upon
behavioral needs,
yeah.
or are behind grade level and they need really an extra push and more resources to get on level.
Absolutely. And the district has long known that. I mean, back in Dr. Height's time, he had, I forget what they called the network, which still I'm sure exists in some, the achievement network or something. And they were going to send an extra reading specialist to schools, things like that. It's all been, around the margins. We actually need much more dramatic investments, particularly in those schools.
Let me read in this comment from Colin in Pennsport, who says, my main capital issues would include providing place structures for schools that don't have one, financially support community-based groups like Friends of groups that have gotten together and picked up a lot of the slack. That's Colin's comment. Patricia from Alney says funding for community services can enhance parental involvement by providing resources and education on supporting their children's mental health. Strong family support systems are critical, and when parents have the tools they need, it creates a reinforcing circle of support for students. So Patricia really hammering behavioral health services, mental health services. David Hardy, let me give you a chance to talk about, you know, where you think, because you're skeptical, I guess, that money will make a transformational difference. But do you also dispute the notion that money will make some difference? And I just want to give you a chance to speak on that. And we are getting toward the end of our hour.
Of course money makes a difference. I didn't say money didn't make a difference. I said that we should spend the money differently.
Mm.
Okay. That's my point. Look, if you look at the Housing Authority, it used to be like back in the 70s, everybody thought the Housing Authority is going to go off Section 8. What they have now is they build better places for people. They have structures that look like they're, you know, market rate structures, and it allows other people in that community to build market rate structures, and it helps build the community. What they did was they learned to mix what they do with the private sector, and they came up with something that works pretty well. And I think the school district would be, public education would be better off if we had more people involved in it. That's just my point.
Well, we do have to leave the conversation there, even though I know there is a lot mm-hmm. more to get to. But I want to thank our guests this hour. You just heard from David Hardy. He is the founder of a charter school here in Philadelphia and current president of Girard College, as well as a distinguished senior fellow at the Commonwealth Foundation. David, thanks so much for your time.
My pleasure.
And right here we have Dan Yervik Acklesberg, lead attorney. I shouldn't say lead, right? I shouldn't say lead.
Correct.
Dan Yervik Acklesberg with the Public Interest Law Center helped a lot on the school funding lawsuit. And thanks so much for your time, Dan.
Thanks so much for having me.
And WHYY's Bridging Blocks will be continuing this conversation at their upcoming event titled Funding the Future, Paying for Public Education on Tuesday, September 10th from 4:30 to 6:30 at the Fishtown Library. Everybody is invited. You can find the details at whyy.org/events.
All right. That does it, I believe, for this hour of Studio 2. Unless you want to do another hour, Cherry.
No. Okay. Well, tomorrow.
Tomorrow.
We'll
okay.
Tomorrow.
Okay. The show is produced by Debbie Builder, Paige Murray Bessler, Andreas Copes. Al Banks is our engineer. Kevin McCory is our executive producer from Studio 2. I'm Avi Wolf-Vanarant.
And I'm Cherry Gregg. Thank you so much for joining us.
If you're a facilities manager at a warehouse and your HVAC system goes down, it can turn up the heat. Literally. But don't sweat it. Grainger has you covered. Grainger offers over a million industrial-grade products for all your operations, including warehouse HVAC maintenance. And even better, they offer access to experts and fast delivery, so you and your warehouse can both keep your cool. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.